We're on? Yeah, okay. We're all doing our, almost all of us, doing our social distancing duty. Because I've been getting, hey, what are you doing? So I'm saying, don't worry, because we're following everything we're told to do, almost. This evening, we'll be discussing Valmiki Muni. Do you know who is Valmiki? You heard his name before?
Yeah.
What do you know about Valmiki? Tell me what you know about Valmiki.
I think he was in the Ramayana.
Yeah, he certainly was. Not only he was in the Ramayana, he was in the Ramayana, but he wrote it down. He's the one that wrote it down. You know who compiled the Vedas? What his name was? Vyasadeva, Vedavyas?
Oh, yeah.
Vedavyas. According to one reference source, in a previous life, Valmiki, in the 26th yuga cycle of Armanu, this is number 27 of Armanu, but number 26 of Armanu, Valmiki was Vyas in a previous lifetime, not the same lifetime. So I thought it'd start with some significant references found in Srimad Bhagavatam about Valmiki, because our listeners have all these chronological questions, so I have to be on my toes about chronology. The Bhagavatam was written after Ram's appearance. Bhagavatam was written 5,000 years ago when Lord Ramachandra appeared in the previous yuga, and Valmiki was during that same time. So, Srimad Bhagavatam writes, this is Prabhupada's purport from Canto 3, Chapter 21. Valmiki Muni practiced yoga meditation for 60,000 years before attaining perfection. So, 60,000 years, that's a long time to do anything. It is a long time to live. And according to what we're accustomed to hearing, it's only possible to do during Satya Yuga, because the life duration in Satya Yuga was how long? Life, maximum life duration during Satya Yuga was?
100,000.
And if he did meditation for 60,000 years, what does that say about what yuga he was doing that meditation? Though it doesn't specify, but the logical inference is he did that meditation during Satya Yuga. So he lived during Satya Yuga. But we also know that he was present during Ram's life. Unless there's different Valmikis during different yuga cycles, that's also possible. The math is a little complicated, because how long did Ram rule for?
11,
1,000 years.
Yeah, 11 or 12,000 years. So that's the life duration in Treta Yuga. More than the life duration in Treta Yuga. So the numbers don't exactly figure. But in any case, he did meditation for 60,000 years. Then there's reference in 12th canto that's relevant. In a purport by Srila Prabhupada, chapter 13, the account of the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra spoken by Valmiki, an account originally related by Lord Brahma in 1 billion verses. 1 billion verses is a lot longer than the Ramayana that we have. And then we're going to hear some detail, but the Ramayana was later summarized by Narada, because Brahma explained it to Narada, and then Narada explained it to Valmiki, who then wrote it. And the number of verses in Valmiki Ramayana is, we just double-checked it on the way over here, 24,000. So that's a fraction of the 1 billion verses originally spoken by Brahma. Some of you were with us, either present in the room now or online, when there was mention about Vibhishan reciting Vishnu Sahasranam. After Hanuman secured the confidence of Sita and reassured her Ram would come and so many other things, when he left the Ashok garden, he had the desire to confront Ravan and warn him and to do some other things. So he was, one of the things he did, in one of the Valmiki Ramayanas, he passed Vibhishan's palace and he heard him chanting Vishnu Sahasranam. So then the question arose, what? That was Treta Yuga, and we hear that, this is a chronology question, that Bhishma Dev recited Vishnu Sahasranam in the Bhishma Parva of Mahabharata, which comes much later, a later yuga at least, and then towards the end of Dwarpa Yuga, Vishnu Sahasranam. So what does that mean? And it means either one of three things. The Valmiki Ramayana version got it wrong. That's a possibility. Or that the Vishnu Sahasranam is not just a composition of Bhishma. There may be different versions of Vishnu Sahasranam. And I did a little research, and according to the resource source, which I don't always trust because it was online, there are three Puranas in which there is a Vishnu Sahasranam. It is to say, identical with the Vishnu Sahasranam that found in Mahabharata, but it sounds a little bit like Bhanu Swami's response. There may be different versions of Vishnu Sahasranam. So when it gets into the maybe category, it's like, why even talk about what may be? Because so many things may be. But, you know, these questions arise. So I'm, you know, anticipating the questions that arise and speaking them before they arise. Or in response to, hey, what's going on? There are certain circumstances where Jiva Goswami has confirmed, or Rupa Goswami has confirmed, or Sanatana Goswami has confirmed, that there are different appearances of the Lord in different yugas. The same Lord appearing in different manner in different yugas. Like a classic one is Varaha. There's Rakta and Sweta Varaha, and Jiva Goswami mixes the two, Shukadeva Goswami mixes the two without differentiating, because there's some variations. in the pastime, not only in the color. Or when we were hearing Hanuman's prayers, commentary by Srila Prabhupada in the Bhagavatam remarks that there's one scriptural source that says Rama and his three brothers are incarnations of Vasudeva, Pradyumna, Sankarsana, and Aniruddha. And there's another source, the Padma Purana source, which says that that Rama is Narayana and the other three are his the items in his hand, his weapons and items for giving benediction. So, which is it? And then he quotes Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur saying it's different yoga cycles. So if your mind starts to perspire, like how it says this over here and says that over there, because that happens sometimes, you know, you can just tell your mind, please calm down. It's quite possible that it says different yoga cycles and different renderings of the pastimes of Ram in different yoga cycles. And that's the territory we're going next. We don't mind controversy, right? There's in Brahma Samhita, Bhakti Siddhanta speaks of a significant controversy that existed during his time. And this controversy had to do with whether the relationship between Krishna and the gopis was within marriage or outside of marriage. And there are some persons that held not possible, it couldn't have been outside of marriage, and others held that it was within marriage. I mean, it was outside of marriage. So, Parakya and Swakya. So he addresses it and gives, you know, the conclusion given by Lord Chaitanya and Lord Chaitanya's followers and why and the justification for that. Bhavade Vidyabhusan, in his commentary Vedanta Sutra, gives an answer to that. That says Radha is the internal potency of the personality of God, specifically the internal pleasure potency, but the internal potency, and the goddesses of fortune are expansions from her. So that's the basis of the pastime of apparently associating with Shakti by Shaktiman outside of marriage, but you know that's just a pastime because there is internal potency. So I hope you don't mind controversy, because you get involved in anything, there's going to be controversy, and you get involved in a vada or a doctrine or a teaching, and there's going to be some people that say something else. And they have their authority for what they, there's something else that they say, and life goes on with controversy. So what do we do? And if you're a follower of Lord Chaitanya, then you're a follower of Rupa Goswami. Or if you're a follower of Rupa Goswami, you're a follower of Lord Chaitanya. And if you're a follower of Rupa Goswami, then you're a follower of Jiva Goswami, because he's a follower of Rupa Goswami, who's the follower of Lord Chaitanya. We understand things through disciplic succession. And Jiva Goswami spells all of this out in his Sandarvas, because it's the teaching of Rupa Goswami. It's the Bhagavatam, which is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya as understood through Rupa Goswami. The teaching of Lord Chaitanya and the teachings of the Bhagavatam are one and the same. So here's what the Bhagavatam says about Valmiki. You ready? It's different than Valmiki Ramayana. That's the starting point. Because who is going to know? Well, Vyasadeva knows, and Vyasadeva spoke to Shukadeva Goswami, and Shukadeva Goswami spoke it to Maharaj Parikshit. So here's what Shukadeva Goswami says to Maharaj Parikshit. Canto 6, chapter 18, and this isn't purport, this is the verse. By the semen of Varuna, the great mystic Valmiki took birth from an anthill. Bhrigu and Valmiki were specific sons of Varuna, whereas Agastya and Vishishta Rishis were common sons of Varuna and Mitra, the tenth son of Aditi. This is in the section where the lineage of kings descending from Kashyapa and so forth. So some of the daughters of Daksha were given in marriage to Kashyapa, and Kashyapa and Aditi. So that's that section. So Valmiki is mentioned there, and specifically it says that he took birth from an anthill. He took birth from an anthill by the semen of Varuna. Now there are other versions of Ramayana that say a little differently. They didn't take birth from an anthill, but he was engaged in meditation for 60,000 years, and the anthill built up around him as he was motionless, engaged in meditation for 60,000 years. Not that he was born, and that Narada heard the chanting, and he came with his kamandalu, and he poured sacred water over the anthill, washing away the ants in the anthill, and there was Valmiki, his disciple. Not that he took birth from the semen of Varuna from an anthill. So there's different versions. Here's what Valmiki says. So that's Shukadeva Goswami, who's authority. And now here's Valmiki, who's authority, and they don't say the same thing. In fact, it appears that even within Valmiki Ramayana, Valmiki says two different things. I'm the tenth son of the Prachetas, O delight of the Raghavas. So he's now speaking about himself to Lord Ram in the concluding section of Ramayana. I do not recall ever uttering an untrue statement, thus these two are your sons, Kush, Love and Kush. These are your sons. He gives his background. Then the same Uttarakhanda, Sarga 96, text 19, Valmiki talks about himself by saying, I'm the tenth son of Varuna. Above, he's the tenth son of the Prachetas, the lord of the... So I'm the tenth son of Varuna, which is similar to what is stated in Bhagavatam, the lord of the waters, or the tenth in descent, that is, the tenth son of Aditi. Again, in Uttarakhanda, this is an earlier sarga, not sarga 96, this is sarga 10. Thus was sung the Ramayana by the mighty son of Varuna, and Brahma signified his glad approval thereof. So there's two sources that already have some differing views. And here's another. This is the Adhyatma Ramayana, which is a section of the Brahmanda Purana. So within the Brahmanda Purana, there's these are Ramayana, the story of Ram. It's called the Adhyatma Ramayana. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur cites this and a whole bunch of other things that I'm just going to read one verse from. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote a song, nine parts, called Sri Harinam. And then later, separately, he wrote a commentary on Sri Harinam. And with one of the stanzas from Sri Harinam, he cites Adhyatma Ramayana. The relevant verses. It has to do with Harinam and the chanting of the holy name by Valmiki, or he became Valmiki. But so here's what Adhyatma Ramayana says. I was previously engaged with the Kiratas. Who are the Kiratas? The like Aborigines. Within India, there's a certain group of Aborigines or tribal people known as Kiratas. You know the verse from Canto 2, Kirata Pulinda, Pulkasha, Abiras. So it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam in Canto 2. It's mentioned in Adhyatma Ramayana, the Kiratas. So Valmiki is saying, I was previously with the Kiratas. Having grown up with them, I was born a Brahmana merely by birth, but constantly engaged in the activities of a Shudra. You know, the dacoit lifestyle. And we'll hear a little bit more of how that happened. But the not only Bhaktivinoda Thakur cites the Adhyatma Ramayana, the specific section where Valmiki says who he was, how he became Valmiki, or his origin, born in a Brahmin family but associating with Kiratas throughout his life. There's reference in Chaitanya Charitamrita to Adhyatma Purana that relates to Lord Ram, because it's Ramayana, Adhyatma Ramayana. And here's what Prabhupada writes in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's very interesting, that's why I just wanted to share it. In the book known as Adhyatma Ramayana, there are statements in chapter 12 to 15 about the worship of the deities of Ramchandra and Sita. So would you like to learn how that happened? Here's how it happened. There it is stated that during Lord Ramachandra's time, there was a Brahmana who took a vow to fast until he saw Lord Ramachandra. But sometime Lord Ramachandra was outside of Ayodhya, and you know, for a week would pass and he wouldn't see Ram, so he wouldn't eat or even drink water till he saw Ram. Then one time he was gone for 12-13 days, and the Brahmana fasted until he saw Ram, and then he took water and took his meal. So Ram came to know about this Brahmana, and so Ram decided that he told Lakshmana, give this Brahmana these deities of me, so you won't have to undergo this difficult austerity. And the Brahmana received the deities. This is in Adhyatma Ramayana. He received these deities from Lakshmana. And throughout his life, he very carefully worshipped the deities. And then when it was time for him to leave the world, what did he do with the deities? Gave him to Hanuman. And what did Hanuman do? He carried them around his neck in a pouch. I don't know how big the deities were, but sometimes you see pictures. This is from the Adhyatma Ramayana. And he served them with devotion. After many years, Hanuman departed. This is Adhyatma Ramayana that we understand from the Bhagavatam. That he's in Kim Purusha Varsha, he didn't depart anywhere. But Adhyatma Ramayana says he departed. And at Gandha Madana, and who did he give the deities to? Bhimasen. Because Bhima is also an incarnation of Vayu, and or son of Vayu. And Bhimasen brought them to the palace in Hastinapur, and there he worshipped them. And then in the lineage from the Pandavas, the final king in the Pandava line was Kshema Kanta, Adhyatma Ramayana says, and he continued to worship the deities in the palace. And he Kshema Kanta gave the deities to the Arisan kings called Gajapatis. And they were in the custody of the kings. And after some time, in the line of Madhvacharya, Narahari Tirtha, in that same disciplic line, received the deities from the king of Orissa. And then Narahari Tirtha gifted them at some point, and they came in the custody of Madhvacharya sometime, just months before he, 3 months before he departed this world. And to this day, those same deities are being worshipped in Udupi, because there's 9 main Udupi deities, 9 main Udupi temples, and the Rama temple and the Rama deities are those same deities that Prabhupada writes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. They originally, where did Ram get them from to give to Lakshmana, to give to this Brahmana? According to Adhyatma Ramayana, they were in the care of Ikshvaku. When Manu entrusted Ikshvaku with ruling the earth and Ayodhya was his capital, here go these deities. So although it's a previous yuga where deity worship wasn't the primary means of achieving perfection, we find even with Dhruva during Satya Yuga, there was instruction from Narada to Dhruva, worship deities along with the other things. And this is Chaitanya Yuga, and it's not, the primary means is not deity worship, but there were deities. Not like there wasn't chanting of the holy name in previous yugas, but the primary means in this age, so, and there's deity worship and there's sacrifice, mantras and fire sacrifice and so forth. So that's interesting. Adhyatma Ramayana is an authentic Ramayana, confirmed by our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and other sources, and that's what the Adhyatma Ramayana says. And to add some, you know, variegatedness to this, the point I wish to make here at this, during this section of this evening's discussion, mentioned before, but there are number of Ramayanas that are authentic. Now, when I grew up in the Hare Krishna movement as a young Western person, I didn't know that there was anything other than Valmiki Ramayana. And other than Valmiki Ramayana, it's just like we didn't pay attention to it because it's not authentic. But there are multiple authentic. It's like, you know, it's taken a while for me to like get my head around that. There's multiple, but there are multiple. And here's another one, because we had this discussion in Naperville, and there's some online people that may have heard the discussion but not the conclusion. There was some reference to Kamba Ramayana. Those of you that are Tamil speaking know what Kamba Ramayana is. Kamba composed Kamba Ramayana in the 12th century. You know, quite some time after Valmiki composed Valmiki Ramayana. And his Kamba Ramayana is in Tamil. It has very unique and wonderful Tamilian poetic expressions. I don't read Tamil, but those that scholarly people, they know that. And today it's well esteemed and well respected, and Sri Vaishnavas who speak on Ramayana will make reference to it. For those reasons, it's poetic composition is beautiful, and it's in Tamil. But there was a problem when he composed it. Kamba or Kamban presents a whole section when Vibhishan is, because we just, yesterday evening, Vibhishan was persuading unsuccessfully. He was attempting to persuade Ravana to return Sita. And in that narration, he has Vibhishan speaking to Ravana about Hiranyakashipu. And Hiranyakashipu being destroyed because of his efforts against Prahlad. And when the contemporaries of Kamban's time saw this, they rejected the whole Ramayana of his work because it's just not in Valmiki Ramayana. And we're loyal to Valmiki Ramayana. In fact, his name, Kamban, has something to do with the Tamil word for pillar. What's the Tamil word for pillar? Is one of them Kamban?
Kamba?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Kamba. Okay. So, not only his name has something to do with the pastime of Lord Nrisimhadev, but it is said that his family deity was Lord Nrisimhadev. So his contemporaries said, no, we can't accept your Ramayana. It sounds nice, but you know, we can't accept it. So what did he do? The history says he went in front of the Nrisimhaswami deity in Sri Rangam, and he sat there and loudly recited that section of Vibhishan speaking to Ravan, and audible to everybody because it was kind of like a public event. And Lord Nrisimhadev applauded and roared very loudly, indicating his approval. So from that time on, you know, they accepted. Lord Nrisimhadev liked it. And they accepted his Ramayana version. That, so maybe Valmiki didn't include everything because it was 24,000 instead of 1 billion. Who can say? To this day, there's a mandap just outside the area of the Nrisimha deity, and it's called Kamba Mandap. I may have been there, never knew what's what, but that's another version of Ramayana besides Valmiki Ramayana that has elements in it that are similar to but different from Valmiki Ramayana. And, you know, there's a couple of scholarly devotees that spent some time doing some research, and they came up with 11 or 12 different versions that state the origin of Valmiki. It's, you know, it kind of makes your head spin, make my head spin. But sometimes it's not Narada, sometimes it's the Saptarishis that come, and you know, the robber tries to rob them, and they say what they, you know, they just say basically the same storyline, except instead of Narada, it's the Saptarishis. And some say he's born in the as a son of Varuna. Some say he's born as a son of a Brahmana, as in the Adhyatma Ramayana, because Varuna is not a Brahmana. He's an administrator of the universe, etc. And it's very elaborate, well respected. So it depends what part of India you're born in and which one you're used to hearing, which one you think that's the authorized one, isn't it? So minimally, step back from all of this. There's another look, seeing that, you know, chant and be happy. There was a discussion in London in July 24th, 1976, with George Harrison in the room and a few others in the room, and Prabhupada speaking about a Bengali version of Ramayana And it's, you know, similar to the Adhyatma Ramayana version, but it's not the same. And Prabhupada is referring to it, maybe because he grew up with it, because it's Bengali. So at least for us, Srimad Bhagavatam and Valmiki, gold standard. And then how do you get a good translation of Valmiki Ramayana? That's another challenge. Like, how do you get a good source of Mahabharata? Because there are different versions of Mahabharata in Sanskrit to translate from, and they're different. So unless you're, you know, superlative, just like even in the commentaries of our acharyas of Srimad Bhagavatam, they will say sometimes one version of Srimad Bhagavatam has this word instead of that word. The different versions of Srimad Bhagavatam, Ramayana, Mahabharata. So we must rely on our acharyas. We trust the cyclic succession, the principle of the cyclic succession. And they can sort through things for us. Not just based on scholarship, but based on revelation, realization. So we're going to hear about that with Valmiki as we go along. So I'm good, just because it's nice, and there's been some feedback as we've been going along, that just hearing, I've been summarizing a bit, but just hearing and hearing the flow of the translation of Valmiki Ramayana, it's nice. So that's what we're going to do for a little while. Just reading and hearing. Are you paying attention over there? Because I'm going to ask you at the end, which part of what you're hearing today resonates with you the most and seems most meaningful and you're going to remember? Okay? Because just hearing. You like to hear, right?
Kind of, yeah.
You like stories? Stories. You like to hear stories?
Yeah.
Okay, this is stories. Let's see what happens. Ratnakar was a Brahmin-born son of the sage Prachetasa, born in the lineage of Angira Muni. While very young, he somehow became lost in the forest. A forest dweller found him, took care of him like a father, and gradually the young boy, Ratnakar, forgot his original family. After being married and having children, Ratnakar found himself unable to maintain his family, so he took to robbery. One day, while prowling for a looting opportunity, Ratnakar stopped in his tracks when he spotted a saffron-clad sage radiating an aura of tranquility. Ratnakar momentarily forgot his purpose and began gawking at Narada Muni. Quickly regaining his composure, Ratnakar confronted Narada Muni, demanding his valuables or his life. Narada Muni spoke in a melodious, soft, lilting tone. "I have nothing of value, but I have one question for you. Why are you eliminating so much sin by your robbery and murder livelihood? Every sin that is committed is definitely going to fructify in the form of a future suffering you have to undergo." His words froze Ratnakar. Then, gathering his composure, he promptly attempted to justify his actions. "I do this with the sole aim of feeding my family." Narada Muni told him that if that was his intention, his family should be willing to share the burden of his sins. Ratnakar was very confident that his family members loved him enough to take part of his sin. Smiling knowingly, Narada asked Ratnakar to validate his belief. Ratnakar rushed to his family and asked them if they would share the consequences of the sins he had accumulated while trying to provide for them. The family members refused to share the consequences of the sins of Ratnakar. Shocked and crestfallen, Ratnakar went back to Narada Muni. Now Ratnakar could be helped. Prostrate at Narada Muni's feet, Ratnakar asked him to solve his dilemma. The fear that his sins would engulf him aggravated Ratnakar's anxiety, and he implored the Muni for guidance. The cloud was lifting just from Narada's association. Narada Muni offered a simple yet effective solution. You know what what did he do? Tender chant Ram's name. But the sound wouldn't come out. And Narada Muni realized he was too sinful. So he asked Ratnakar to chant the word Mara, which means death. You know the story? It's not a new story. So Mara, 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 and became Rama. And so he had faith in Narada. He had faith in the instructions of Narada, so he followed Narada's instructions with determination. And days passed, and weeks passed, and months passed, and years passed. And never once getting up, eating, or even sleeping, ants began to crawl all over his body and gradually made a huge anthill upon it. Besieged by ants, Ratnakar was almost invisible. Many years later, like 60,000 years later, according to Bhagavatam, many years later, when traveling through the forest, Narada stopped, for he thought he distinctly heard the Rama chant emanating from somewhere close. And he followed the sound, and it was the anthill. Narada Muni sprinkled some holy water on the anthill. The anthill dissolved, and there's Ratnakar. Narada Muni gasped. Ratnakar opened his eyes to the soothing voice of his spiritual master. Valmiki Muni stirred out of his meditation into the present. His eyes swelled with tears of gratitude and seeing Narada Muni, his savior. Narada Muni was so moved, he embraced Ratnakar and gave him a new name, Valmiki Muni, the sage who emerged from an anthill. Profusely, Valmiki Muni thanked his teacher again and again and again. And Narada instructed him to praise Lord Ram by incessantly chanting the Supreme Pure Holy Name. Not only Narada Muni forgave the confrontation program, but he bestowed upon him unwavering strength for meditation and relentless chanting of the holy name. The chanting purified him and spiritually elevated him enough to attract the mercy of Lord Ram. Lord Ram's mercy in turn presented him with the opportunity to serve Mother Sita. And it was Mother Sita's mercy that empowered him to write the Ramayana. Later, Valmiki acknowledged, "I am the product of mercy, and let that same higher power use me as an instrument to compose the Ramayana." So Ratnakar becomes Valmiki, and Valmiki follows Narada's instructions. And while following Narada's instructions, one time Narada comes to visit Valmiki. This is now the composition of Ramayana by Valmiki. Of course, there's other... Valmiki appears, towards the end of Ramayana again, and so forth. But here's... One day Valmiki was visited in his ashram by Narada Muni. Valmiki asked him, "Who was the most virtuous person in the world?" Wanting to know if there was a perfect person anywhere, he asked, "Who possesses all power and who knows what is right? Who is always truthful, firm in resolve, and conscious of all services rendered? Who has subdued his self, conquered anger, is above fault-finding, and although being friendly to all beings, is nevertheless feared by even the gods when angry? O eminent sage, I have a great curiosity to know this, and you are surely capable of telling me." The commentary says Valmiki had already realized all these things. Now he's just seeking confirmation from Narada Muni in the manner that he's doing. So Narada Muni replied, "There is one descended in the line of Ikshvaku and known by men as Rama. He is powerful, radiant, resolute, and has brought his senses under control, intelligent, sagacious, eloquent, glorious, and an exterminator of foes. He knows the secret of virtue, is true to his promise, and is intent on the good of the people." So then there's a long section in Valmiki Ramayana where Narada summarizes the 1 billion verses that he heard from Brahma. Now he's speaking this in a contemporary way. That is to say, this Rama is now ruling in Ayodhya. Indeed, you have already met him when he came to your ashram. The remaining part of his pastimes are yet to be manifested. O sage, all this will soon be described by yourself. This sacred story of Rama, known as the Ramayana, should be heard by all men. It is on a par with the Vedas and capable of destroying all sins. Hearing or reading this narrative, a man will, on departing from this world, be honored in heaven along with his sons, grandsons, followers, and attendants. He gave him the little summary, synopsis of Ramayana, and let him know that you'll write the Ramayana, the remainder of the pastimes. Narada rose to leave and was worshipped by Valmiki. As the celestial seer rose into the sky by his mystic power, Valmiki stood thinking about Ram. He had already sensed his divinity when he met him some years back. Narada had confirmed his intuition. Feeling thrilled with transcendental ecstasy, Valmiki made his way toward the nearby river to take his midday bath, followed by his disciples. You know, we've all heard these things so many times, so it's not like, hey, tell me something new. It's just the sound vibration is elevating and purifying and hearing it again and hearing it again and hearing it again. Like hearing the Dhruva story again and again, and like making sound of wood, it just keep moving your hand in that circular motion, and the fragrance and the cooling feature of sandalwood comes out of the sandalwood in the form of sandalwood pulp. So it's like that. The spiritual topics are meant to be heard again and again in the company of like-minded souls. There's this potency, katayantaschamam nityam, tushyanticha, ramanticha. As he went to the riverbank, the rishi surveyed the beautiful forest scenery. He saw, playing among the reeds by the river, a pair of cranes. Those two birds were engaged in mating, and they sported together, making a delightful sound. Suddenly, as Valmiki looked on, a Nishada huntsman fired an arrow and struck one of the birds, mortally wounded and covered in blood. It thrashed about on the ground, screaming in pain. Its mate also cried piteously and fell about in sorrow. Seeing this, the soft-hearted Valmiki felt compassion. He saw that Nishada approaching with bow in his hand. In grief, he said to that hunter, in Sanskrit, "As you have slain this poor bird while it was absorbed in pleasure, may you have no peace of mind for the rest of your life." The curse came out in perfectly metered poetry. Astonished by this, Valmiki said, "What have I uttered? Tormented by grief, I have composed a stanza filled with that emotion." Brooding over the incident, the sage entered the river and took his bath. After coming out, he went back to his hermitage, still thinking on the rhyming couplet he had spoken to the hunter. And then something very startling happened. When he reached his ashram, he took a seat and was about to commence his lessons to his disciples, and Brahma suddenly appeared there. Seeing the great creator of the universe approaching on his swan carrier, Valmiki hastily rose, joined his palms in humility, and offered prostrated obeisances and worshipped Brahma with many prayers. Brahma then sat down on an exalted seat, quickly brought for him by Valmiki's students. Even though Brahma was present before him, Valmiki could not stop thinking about the incident with the hunter. He again recited the verse he had composed. Feeling sorry that he had lost control of himself, he appeared dejected and sighed. Brahma laughed and said, "Let this poetic utterance of yours become the source of your glory. Do not brood any more, O sage. It was by my arrangement that this speech flowed from your lips." In the same meter, you should now describe the pastimes on earth of the all-wise Rama. Tell the story of that hero as you've heard it from Narada. By my mercy, whatever activity, whether known or confidential, about the all-knowing Rama, as well as about Lakshmana, or even about all the Rakshasas, as well as whatever there is to be known or confidential about Sita, all that will be revealed to you. You will be able to see every detail of that story as clearly as a fruit held in the palm of your hand. Not one word of yours in this poem will be proven false. Compose the auspicious and mind-pleasing story of Lord Rama using the pattern of this metrical verse. As long as there are mountains and rivers on the earth, the story of Lord Rama will endure among people. As long as the story of Lord Rama composed by you endures, you will dwell in this world and in the upper worlds. Therefore, render this sacred and soul-ravishing tale into verse for the good of the world. He also told him that he would be able to continue living anywhere he chose within the universe for the same length of time. Having finished speaking, Brahma disappeared. Valmiki was filled with wonder. He and his disciples gazed in amazement in Brahma's seat for some time. Gradually, Regaining their presence of mind, the sage's students began reciting the verse he had uttered to the hunter. They were overjoyed at the honor bestowed upon Valmiki by Brahma. The sage then began to meditate on Rama's pastimes, gradually composing the Ramayana over the coming days. And the final little section. Having heard the entire theme of the Ramayana, he heard from Narada, which is conducive to religious merit and economic development, Valmiki tried to uncover the details of the highly learned Rama, sitting on a mat of kusha grass with its tips pointing east. Valmiki sipped water according to scriptural regulation for his purification, and he said Achman. Then he joined his hands and began considering how to achieve his goal of composing the Ramayana. The sage was actually able to perceive everything regarding Ram, Lakshman, Sita, Dasharath, and his queens and kingdom, how they laughed, walked, and acted. All this he saw by mystic power. Moreover, whatever Lord Ram, who was true to his promise, did in the company of Sita and Lakshman as they wandered in the forest, he was able to see. While situated in yogic trance, the pious soul Valmiki saw everything that happened. The great sage saw all that by dint of his yogic ability. Then he prepared to compose the story of the all-glorious Rama. That story contains elaborations on the four principles of Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. As the ocean is full of gems, so is the Ramayana full of literary ornaments. It attracts the ears and minds of everyone. The sage then began composing the story of the Raghu dynasty exactly as he heard it recited by the great soul Narada. Of course, Valmiki has roles to play further, but that's the little bit of the background of how he became empowered to do what he did, how he moved from, at least some of the versions specifically, moved from the lower status to the higher status, from a robber and murderer to a devotee, and then from a devotee to the most exalted devotee position by the mercy of, the combined mercy of Narada and his sincere effort. And dedication to the chanting of the name. That this section of the Adhyatma Ramayana specifically, as mentioned, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as we know, he's more contemporary to us than Valmiki. And he was born in an aristocratic family, a well-educated aristocratic family, but had his calamities. His father died when he was very young, and so many things. And he did not even, like some of us in the room, he didn't contact Lord Chaitanya's teachings and even the Bhagavatam until he was in his mid-30s, just because there were no printing presses, and it just, you know, wasn't prominent. And very quickly, like really quickly, within 1 year, he wrote a book about the contents of the Bhagavatam, but for his contemporary audience, the educated people of his time, who were very much influenced by Western ideology because of the British influence, and they bought into the whole British influence paradigm, and that helped the British to rule because their intellectuals were had bought into their paradigm, that everything Western, everything European is good and everything Indian is backwards. So anyway, that was his audience, and he had great appreciation as well as realization about the chanting of the holy name. And this Sri Harinam song was not just a song, it ended up being a composition, and one of the stanzas of the song is specific about the power of the name, which shows up in Valmiki's life. That's a very important faith-producing narration that Valmiki went from not just like somebody that didn't know, he went from being a robber, a criminal. Not just a sudra, but a criminal. He didn't have to go to jail or reform school or something. He just met Narada. Now, Narada is uncanny in his potency, and Valmiki wasn't an ordinary person. Anyone can do what he did with the little association that he had and so forth. He's an extraordinary person. He was a fit recipient for Narada's mercy. But it's illustrating, at least for us, a principle. There's immense potency in the chanting of the name. There's immense potency in receiving benedictions from Narada or the spiritual master, then in turn that maturing. There's further stages for all of us, just awaiting our becoming more mature. Now, there's choices that we have to make as we go along, or we won't mature. This is another teaching of Bhaktivinoda. It's on the theme. It's actually the teaching that, one of the principal teachings that was the impetus for acceptance and progress. Bhaktivinoda writes that the yoga ladder, we're all familiar with that. So what is identified as on this rung or that rung or the next rung of the yoga ladder, based upon not going forward. But if one is going forward, then one can transition through this phase, that phase, that the other phase, and still be on the path of bhakti, and they're just phases of realization and phases of emphasis. And so one should recognize what position one is in and be always looking forward to making the next step. This is, in simple language, this is the clearing stage. In chanting, there's offensive and there's namaparad and there's nam-shuddhanam, pure chanting, and then there's the transition phase. That's where we are, the transition phase. And the transition phase is marked by wanting to overcome the offenses or overcome the obstacles or to come to the stage, striving to come to the stage of hearing the pure holy name. And when we try to hear the pure holy name, there's a very clear realization. I'm not able to do it. Don't try and you won't have that realization, but try and you'll have the realization. I can't do this. I can't do this on my own, and therefore I need mercy. Not like throw my hands up the air or forget it. I can't win. If you can't win, don't play, right? That's the t-shirt. If you can't win, don't play. It's all about win-lose. If you can't win, don't play. But it's not play, it's the winning is being in that transition phase, that liminal space language that I've been using a lot lately, in between this and that, and keep moving. And like our little discussion yesterday, that's wherever you are, that's where you are. And then, okay, What's some incremental step in the direction I want to go with my life? What's my goal of life? Is my goal of life just to stay where I am, or is the goal of life to, what's the goal of my life? What's important to me? So those are essential questions. And to the degree that we ask the question, we'll get something of an answer, and it'll probably get refined as we go along. So Valmiki Ramayana is here to help us take a look at the potential, the potency, and what's been given to us. We're not exactly dacoits, but we're not exactly saints either. And somebody came along and said, wake up. Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago. Gorachandra Bole. We're sleeping in the lap of the witch of Maya. Wake up, wake up. And so the chanting of the holy name and the hearing of these wonderful narrations about Srimad Bhagavatam and Ramayana, the pastimes of Krishna and his devotees and his incarnations and so forth. This is, it's cleansing. It's a spiritual sound bath. And if we're consciously interacting with that spiritual sound bath, we'll get more cleansed than if we're just a lump on a log. We're not consciously interacting with that sound vibration. Sound vibration has potencies in any case. But we'll get more of the impact of that sound vibration potency by the eagerness to receive the purification that comes from that sound vibration. Want to be connected, want to understand the wonderful features of Ram. And the author of Valmiki Ramayana is one such person. Okay. So, any comments or discussion? Online question.
So, this is from Haranath Prabhu, right? Question 2 on Vishwamitra topic from this noon program. From the time quarreled with Vashishta till he meets with Lord Ramachandra, is that all waste of time for Vishwamitra?
Could you hold the microphone a little further away? Because you got a strong voice.
Sure.
Which is nice. And to hold the microphone correspondingly a little further. Yeah. And could you point this speaker towards me a little bit? Thank you. Now try again.
From the time quarreled with Vashishtha till he meets with Lord Ramachandra, is that all waste of time for Vishwamitra?
No. Why? Why would he think that way?
Each time when he met, beginning with Vashishta, Trishanku, Menaka, Rambha, he was respectively captivated by greed, envy, desire and anger.
Yeah.
Between desire and anger, both are equally damaging.
Yes.
In spite of so many years of austerity, no progress is seen.
No, he got the realization this is inadequate. He still had greed. He wanted that, I want that Brahmarshi label. I want their certificate.
So he was asking, how do we understand this? And is this because he did not take the shelter of Lord?
Yes. But then, it's a simple way is like wet wood becoming dry wood before he could ignite. So it was wet wood becoming dry wood.
Okay.
He didn't become a devotee until he had contact with devotees. But then when he had contact with devotees, he was in the fast lane because he was dry wood. There is purification, not spiritual elevation per se, but there is purification through what he was doing, the austerities, etc. Controlling the mind and senses is not easy for a conditioned soul, and to do that required, one can only imagine, a lot of determination. But he didn't have a spiritual teacher yet, and spiritual teaching yet, but it was so just wet wood becoming dry wood. It's not even put in the fire yet, just wet wood becoming dry wood. Because before he was a king that was like, you know, super proud and super this and that. It was really soggy wood, not just wet wood. So it was beneficial on the but that beneficial becomes totally useless unless the Krishna bhakti awakens. Totally useless. So is it useful? It helped him go quickly once he had association. For us, for some people, you know, maybe a little slower. And then some people even slower than slower. But it's not a waste of time. The one way to make wet wood dry is put it next to the fire. Another way to make wet wood dry is just let it sit where there isn't wet. And it'll slowly dry. Just from the heat of the sun. Okay, do you have the microphone?
This question challenge, the first question challenge he asked, but there's a follow-up question.
Okay.
So probably I think...
You need the microphone, please.
No, she...
Okay, she needs the microphone, please.
Manthara did what she did, then we hear two answers.
We covered this already.
Yes, yes.
That's right.
We did it already. We did it already.
Yes, yes.
This is in general as well, not only in case of Manthara, how we comprehend all multiple answers.
We already did this already.
Yes.
We did this one.
So addition to above question, as absolute truth is one, is it okay to come to conclusion that everything happened as part of Leela?
No.
And accordingly, all characters are playing their roles and acting as his instruments to teach us lessons to attain him.
No. We're, you know, they can be instruments of Maya, not instruments of Krishna. No, Maya is an instrument of Krishna. But you know, so one of the lessons could be, this is miserable. So that's a lesson. But it's not like the lesson of who is Krishna and impetus for taking shelter of Krishna, other than I went out of this miserable. So the answer is no. It's the internal potency and the external potency act differently. Someone may act as an instrument of our karma, and there's a lesson to be learned about, you know, this is coming because of my karma, but it doesn't necessitate understanding what's behind the karma, like who's the wielder of karma, and what's the place of shelter where there's no karma. That may not be the conclusion. Something else?
Maharaj, I have one question.
Okay.
So, from yesterday's discussion, I was contemplating on satisfaction, and from today's class, I am contemplating on gratitude. Also from Dhruva Maharaja's pastimes, I was contemplating on developing gratitude. So, like, in integrating everything together, I just have a little question to ask that, like in childhood, somebody carries a notion about themselves. About themselves. Because of how they were raised and how their surroundings were and everything.
Naturally.
So, when they grow up with that notion, and like in narcissism lectures also you had covered this point, but when that crashes down, that they were not that they were thinking, actually.
Yeah.
And they had really little capacity to do some little things. But now this huge burden is there on their back that... Wow, I was having, like somebody told that I was having wings of an eagle and I am just like a chirping like a bird here. So now in adulthood also, carrying that burden, no sense of gratitude comes very easily. No sense of satisfaction comes very easily. So much struggle goes on, so much push and pull goes on. So what is... How that person should reconcile? I mean, he's trying, but because of his own notions about himself, they are crashing to the ground, and so much struggle is just going on internally, unnecessarily. It feels like unnecessary, but I guess it's important also.
Of course.
As you just mentioned, that it was important. It was not waste of time. But I'm not able to understand. Well, it is about myself I'm asking, so... Just.
It sounds like teenage life. I mean, the profile of teenage life. But it happens at other stages too.
Yeah.
It just cycles around. It's just like particularly prominent during a certain going from youth to young adulthood. It's like, ooh. So, super turbulent. But, and you know, transitioning from thinking I know to knowing that I don't know, and that's uncomfortable, and then resetting, you know, the reset button, saying I want to know. But yeah, but there's this comfort zone. Was I'm used to thinking that I know, and I'm not yet used to the notion of knowing that I don't know. So I want to hurry up and get to a place where I know. So it's easy. It's quicker to go back to thinking that I know, but it's not there. So. Your question specifically is how to move through that transition zone. Keep it simple.
So that false notion still lingers.
Yeah.
How to get rid of that and come to the ground reality?
Well, you have to have another. You have to have through sound. The Bhagavatam gives this example of an inchworm. It's a really nice one. An inchworm doesn't fly from one branch to the other. The inchworm reaches the front part of its body out this way, that way, till it contacts something over there. And then it can let go of the back legs, and the body of the inchworm arches and the back legs come to where the front legs were. Or are the new place, but it has to be the front legs contact something. Now that metaphor is in the Bhagavatam to illustrate, you know, something we don't have remembrance of. That is the soul leaving this body and going to the next body. It has to be determined where the next body is before you can give up this body. That's what coma is. It hasn't been decided yet what's the next place. The body's unfit, but what the next place is isn't clear yet. So that's the transmigration of the soul. But even during the lifetime, not just giving up the body, but giving up the conception of who I am. So how to handle that is know who you are. Otherwise, you're just going to put on another, you know, set of clothes and think that's me. Another conception of who I am, and it's not who you are. Therefore, it's by sound. Because some other sound will come. You know, you should do this. you should study this and become this kind of career person, or you should go to this group and become like this group is like, and you hear from that group and I'll go over there. But it's still not who you are. So it's sound. Material, what to speak of spiritual. I mean both. The transformation to go from the unknown to the known is through sound. So there's the cleansing, the letting go of, emphasis on your point, and letting go of requires purification through sound, but also like, what's next? Most likely you've heard me say multiple times, because I repeated it multiple times, about this yoga studio owner in Chengdu. We're still in communication. She just recently wrote to me. Like, anyway, what's my mission? So she still doesn't know, because she's too busy with the external. What to speak of the coronavirus situation. So she was sharing what's going on with her life with that. So, but she still doesn't know. So you can't let go of the memory and the conception unless you have at least the dawning or the awakening of a higher conception, or who you really are, conception. And that comes from hearing to connect with who you really are. That means some of the covering has to be cleansed so you can see who you are. Like this nice Lila with Kabanda saying, my intelligence capacity isn't going to be restored until the curse that's been put upon me is relieved. And if when I give up this body based upon the benediction that was given along with the curse, then my intelligence will be restored. But now I can't see clearly. As long as we're holding on, we're not going to see clearly. We want to see clearly, but we're holding on. So how do we let go of what we're holding on to? You have to have a place to go to. So they happen simultaneously. The rising of the sun and the dissipation of darkness. Through the hearing process, that both the cleansing and the illumination. And the medium is bhakti, service to adhoksacha. I like the word, it's in right in the Bhagavatam. Using our senses to serve he who we can't see with our senses. It requires faith, but the faith comes through sound. And it's not like a blind faith. People have faith in all kinds of things that they've never seen, just by hearing. So the main method is hearing. Hearing from the right source. And that hearing from the right source gives knowledge, and that nurtures faith. So we go back and hear more with more faith.
While hearing, our consciousness should be just to please Krishna, nothing else. Like,
well, we're not there yet.
Right.
It should be, but we're not there yet. So we strive to get there. We you know, this is the acceptance and the progress message. Yeah. I got my stuff. I should be, but I got my stuff. So let me accept, and then let me move towards what should be. Otherwise, I'll be beating myself up all the time. And that's not productive. Doesn't achieve anything. So, but hearing with faith. Okay?
Yes, good. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Very small question.
I thought you'd have a question.
Yeah, like you said that Vyasadeva was Valmiki in some previous life.
One version of Ramayana says that, yes.
Oh, so Srimad Bhagavatam says that Srila Vyasadeva is incarnation of Krishna.
Our current Vyasadeva is.
Yeah, okay. So he was a different Vyasadeva.
Well, let's do this. Let's step back. Every end of Dwarpa Yuga, there is a person who occupies that post. In Vishnu Purana, the main speaker of Vishnu Purana is Parashramuni, Father Vyasadeva. Parashramuni says, of all the Vyasadevas, this one is the best. He said, even I was Vyasadeva two Vyasadevas ago. But he's the best because he's Krishna. And you know who's going to be the next Vyasadeva according to the Puranas? You'll never guess if you don't know what it says. I'm getting your enthusiasm to hear up. Ashwatthama.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah. He was spared by Arjuna and he goes off to perform austerities, and in the next cycle of yugas he becomes the next Vyas, according to one of the Puranas. It's kind of a well known, I'm not sure which Purana says it, but it's well known. He becomes the next Vyas. So it's a post. And our Vyas is Krishna, the Vipayana Vyas. He's the best. And Parashar says, look at his Mahabharata. It's the best. It has everything. And that I learned from Tathasandarbha, by the way. What Parashar says about our Vyas. He's Krishna. And his composition of Mahabharata is the best. Let's admit multiple Mahabharatas, not only multiple Ramayanas. Okay?
Okay.
That answer. This is the second question. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, in service to Guru and Krishna, is faith, gratitude, desire, understanding, and then service natural sequence?
Gosh. I think, you know, the sequence is what Rupa Goswami writes, and that you can rely on. Adarshadha, Tatak, Sadhu Sangha, etc. That's what you can rely on.
Other questions?
Yeah.
Why should the hunter be cursed? That is, after all, his duty to take care of himself within his capacity. Any significance of this hunter here in this incident?
I'm not sure what the question is about. Are you clear what the question is about? Could you say it in your own words what the question is about? Use the microphone. Does anybody in the room understand the question? Because I don't understand the question. Microphone.
The question is that he was hunter by profession.
Okay.
So then hunting, as per the question, is that a sin that he
yes,
should be
responsible? Yes, of course it is. What kind of... So I'm a butcher. By profession. I'm doing my duty because I'm a butcher. It's sinful. It's a sinful profession. It's not... It's my profession, so it's clean.
Valmiki had to listen to Narada just once to begin chanting, and he chanted for almost 65,000 years steadfastly.
Pretty good, huh? Now what about us?
Why is it that it is so difficult for us to put into practice what we theoretically accept? The chanting seems so dry, it seems very inorganic. There are moments when the chanting is blissful and I'm engaged. I know it is said over and over again that I need to keep chanting and it will be cleanse my heart. but the road seems so barren. Why is it that I am not able to find enthusiasm as Valmiki felt with such tiny kindling? I am after all exposed to spiritual talk so often, but the effect seems very minute.
That question came up in the midday session today, after the gathering. And because it was a housewife that asked the question, the example I gave was really easy for her to understand. You have a duty to cook, so you go into the kitchen and you turn the stove on, you put some water and some rice and some salt, and you put the pot 3 feet above the stove. And then you say, how come it's taking so long? So move the pot closer to the stove. Put it right on the flame. And the rice is going to cook much quicker than slower. So that proximity of the pot to the stove is attentiveness. The name has everything, but we're experiencing it as dry and barren, etc., etc., because our attentiveness is elsewhere. Or you can say it in different ways. We're distracted, or we're covered, or some, you know, different ways of saying the same thing. No, we have thirst for the impermanent. Another way of saying the same thing, Asat Krishna. This, saying the same thing in another way. In the process of creation, the very first thing, there's the living entities are cast into the pradhan by the glance of Mahavishnu, and with that, the living entities is time. Their yet unmanifest swabhava or nature, or you know, and their karma, their guna and karma, but specifically the word is swabhava. And before there's anything, and when the avidya got them, we're covered by ignorance. So why does it seem barren? We're covered by ignorance. And what is the, how does that ignorance manifest itself? I want to enjoy separately from Krishna. That's not Krishna. I have a thirst for the impermanent. And so it seemed barren. Because I'm doing something that's permanent, while I have a thirst for something that's impermanent. Seems so mechanical, because there's nothing fruitive about it. And I want fruitive. What's fruitive about chanting? Where's it going to get me sense gratification? That's the fruit I want. So it doesn't match the contamination of the soul's expectation for what happiness is, and so the other form comes along, and that's where the mind goes instead of to the soul. It's our contamination. So what do you do when the wet wood is wet? Make it dry. So there are different ways of making it dry, but there isn't a better way than attentive chanting. And striving for attentiveness in chanting is the most effective way, because at the end, as the attentiveness becomes, or as the wet wood becomes more dry, then you're right there. You're on the fire. Supposing you do something else, you do what Vishwamitra did. You do austerities and penances, and then you get distracted and you lose it all. You go around the Ferris wheel a few times. It's because of our aversion to Krishna, or said differently, it's our attraction for the impermanent that makes it seem what this person is describing. The problem isn't in the name or the process. The problem is our affinity for the temporary and being the enjoyer of it in different ways. at different stages of life, it looked like this, and then it looked like that, and then the other thing. Just like our little friend over here. You know, he's not interested in adults, he's interested in kids' activity. And this, you know, that's fine. He's interested in kids' activity. Be a kid. Fine. And, you know, and teenagers and so forth and so on. You know, it's just stages of what's attractive. What's attractive for him may not be attractive for her. What's attractive for her may not be attractive for me. And, you know, and then later, you know, what's attractive for today is not going to be necessarily attractive tomorrow. And so forth. So, you know, the kaleidoscope keeps turning, but the principle is pretty stubborn. Affinity for the temporary. And where does that take you? So this person is asking the question, where's the affinity for the temporary going to take you? Look around you. It's not a pretty picture. So, is there an option? Well, do it differently. Okay. Affinity for a different temporary. A more motive goodness temporary. Maybe. And just keep, you know, moving the kaleidoscope, and it doesn't. So, how do we cultivate affinity for sat? Well, it starts with recognizing its knowledge of what asat is and where that path goes, and where sat is and where that path goes, and I want to cultivate sat. So, there's some inconvenience for some time to get a little detox from the sat, from the asat to the sat. So, you know, mix in a little asat along with sat because I'm conditioned. I have the affinity for the temporary along with affinity for the... But that's a step. But then, you know, spiritualize that my affinity for the temporary as much as, you know, it's realistic to do so. So to such person, you know, just in addition to carrying on with dry chanting because you're told to do so, try to spiritualize the things that you like to do. That was our discussion yesterday evening. You know, you like to eat. Most people like to eat. So learn how to make that eating thing that you like something that's in connection with Krishna. And, you know, move that in that direction, etc. Spiritualize the activities of your life through the power of chanting. Okay. Yeah.
Can only a Siranjeevi become a Vyasadeva?
Can one what?
Siranjeevi become Vyasadeva because Ashwatthama is Siranjeevi?
Could you say it slower and clearer? Can you become a Vyasadeva? That's what the person's question is?
No.
They want to become Ashwatthama,
Vyasadeva. Ashwatthama is Siranjeevi.
Ashwatthama is Siranjeevi.
Siranjeevi.
Okay, so?
Only, you know, those person can become
no. This is a silly question. Someone can become whatever the qualified person doesn't have to be in this category, that category. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I think I have like a follow up from yesterday.
Okay.
You said that there's a stark difference between material enjoyment and spiritual enjoyment.
There is.
So.
And that the stark difference is who's at the center.
Yeah. What does spiritual enjoyment look like?
What does it look like? But it's the behavior may look the same, but the consciousness behind the behavior is the world of difference. Let's take, you know, because you like music, let's take music. So there's mode of ignorance music, mode of passion music, mode of goodness music, and then there's devotional music. But there can be devotional music where the musician is, the activity is, like, let's say a professional musician. They sing, but they want money. That's why they sing, because they want money. And they may sing bhajans, but, you know, their motivation is they want money. So they're like the professional reciter, the Bhagavatam, the Ramayana or something, and it's all about them. They're at the center, it's not the Lord is at the center. It says fashionable. And people like the fashionable, and they have a good voice, and so then there's us. We're neophytes, and we like singing. But the consciousness of this singing is for the pleasure of Krishna. It's generally not there at the beginning stage of a sadhaka. It's, you know, I enjoy singing, and I enjoy the social interaction with the singing, and, you know, I can sing for a long time. I really like it. It's about my enjoyment. And then spiritual enjoyment is another kind of consciousness. The activity may look the same, but it's the consciousness behind. So your question is, what does spiritual enjoyment look like? It can look like the material enjoyment. That's the consciousness behind is different. And the consciousness, happiness, enjoyment, worlds apart. Like day and night, worlds apart. It's the same world, but, you know, lights on, lights out. So there's some light, because we got some artificial light. So it's like, I'm happy, I'm enjoying. What's the problem? Etc. Let's say you're studying. You know, there's studying for school, and there's studying scripture, and some people study with a view of scripture. Some people study scripture with a view of accumulating knowledge, and they like showing off that they've got all this knowledge. My impression is, look at all this in my information basket. Look at this, all this information over here. So, jnana, Mishra Bhakti, not the enjoyment is not the same as Shuddha Bhakti. Our great acharyas, they know all those things, but they're not, their happiness is not, I know all these things. Their happiness is making the connection with Krishna. That's enjoyment, that's another consciousness enjoyment. So now go to the Vrindavan. They're taking care of cows. Some people take care of cows, they're not in Vraja Bhakti. They take care of cows for another reason. It's nice taking care of cows. But the consciousness, the enjoyment is this for the pleasure of Krishna? That's what spiritual enjoyment looks like. And that's like, you know, you can't get enough of it. You never become tired with it. You know, in the morning we're reading the Govardhan Lila. They didn't get tired. And we're thinking of, you know, anything. Sleep, eat, answer the call of nature. We don't hear anything like that. They're just another place. That's spiritual enjoyment. And Krishna was enjoying their enjoyment. And they were enjoying Krishna's enjoyment. And that's what spiritual enjoyment looks like. What love looks like. It's not about me, it's about the... It's, there's happiness, but the happiness is the happiness of the other, of the beloved. That's spiritual enjoyment. And then medium is service. Anyone else?
Questions.
You have something?
There are questions on Facebook and YouTube, so I'll read.
You want to take the microphone?
Yeah, may I? Thank you.
If you don't, we're in trouble.
This question is from Shashirekha Devidas Mataji, and the question is, how Ashwatthama got the position of Vyasadeva in spite of doing so much offenses? I thought one needs a lot of purity.
Yeah, he got purification. That's what happened. The details of how that transpired is not spoken, but purification. So even a bad person can become purified, in other words.
This question is from Mahindri Mataji. Lord Rama was born under the sun lineage, Suryavanshi, and Lord Krishna in the Chandravanshi.
Yes.
And Lord Krishna gave Gita knowledge to Vivaswan. Is there a relationship between that and Lord Rama being born as a Suryavanshi?
Yes.
Any significance to that?
Yes. Krishna is the source of everything, including the sun and the sun god. And the knowledge given to the sun god, he's the source of everything. And Ram decorated that lineage by taking birth in that lineage. That's the connection.
This question is from Radha Vallabh Das Prabhu. The instruction on acceptance and progress gradually is very inspiring. Can this approach be viewed as being complacence due to gradual or slow progress?
It can be viewed as complacent, but it can also be properly applied. It can be viewed as sustainable and wise.
Last question.
Mm-hmm.
If my understanding, this question is from Rama Prabhu. If my understanding is right, Narad Muni met Ratnakar way before Lord Rama's appearance. Even at that time, Narada gave Lord name as Rama way before Lord was given a name by sages or parents.
No problem. If you're a Trikalagya, no problem. And in the Dhruva story, we hear Narada being described as Trikalagya. So before it happened, he knew. Mm-hmm. That's it?
Yeah, let me just make sure that I'm not missing
anything.
Yes,
Maharaj,
that's
well,
it.
Well, good. Yeah. Okay. Are you ready? Yeah. Remember the question?
Yeah.
Okay, so give him the microphone. We're just going to move on. Ram Raghav, we're going to move on.
Yes,
please. So I have to share my takeaway, right?
Yeah, what's your takeaway? Yeah, that's your takeaway. From all of the blah, blah, blah that went on today, what's something that really, like, struck you and you're going to remember it? It's meaningful to you.
Maybe that if you do something bad, you have to take your karma, and whatever you do, you have to, like, you can't, like, run away from it.
Mm. Mm. Mm.
So if you make a choice, that's your choice, and then
you're responsible for your choices. That's good. That's definitely true. Now, here's a question based upon what you just said. Supposing you make a bad choice and you accept responsibility for it. Now, is there anything else you can do besides accepting responsibility for it going into the future? You follow the question? Supposing, you know, because Ratnakar was a robber. So at least in one version, he was a Brahmin, but he fell into bad association. He went into the forest, got lost, and got trained up by robbers, so he became a robber. He was a good person, became a bad person. Now he has to be responsible for the bad stuff. But now he turned to Narada and said, what do I do about this bad stuff? So is there an option for somebody to make some bad decisions and do some bad stuff? What's the option?
I feel like he should have, like, in the first place, if he really didn't want that to happen, I don't think he should have, like, thought about, like, being with the robbers.
Yeah, he made a wrong choice. And with the wrong choice, he made some wrong actions, and he's going to have responsibility for those reactions. So he can't go back and redo the choice. I accept that there's going to be some reaction. So he put a question to Narada, which is the question I'm putting to you. What do I do? I got these reactions coming, and I made some choices, but I don't like the reactions that are going to be coming. What can I do? So he gave him the holy name. That's what he did. And so, what does the holy name do? It's not like, okay, now everything's good because I'm chanting the holy name. I'm still responsible. It isn't like absolve my responsibility. But going forward in time, I want to cleanse as far as I can cleanse. It's like this question of, chanting is barren, or this other takes so long, or something like that. My condition is I'm responsible for the choices, and now I'm covered. And more karma is coming, time is waiting for it to come. Now what am I to do? Take shelter of sound vibration. Then the easiest sound vibration is the name. There's other sound vibrations we can also take shelter of. So the name and the pastimes and the activities and all that. And that's going to cleanse the soul. So that the tendency to do the bad choices and, the bad activities from the bad choices, that goes away. Not just, gee, I'm sorry, but I have to take responsibility. It takes away the tendency to do that again, and it reduces our karma. One becomes free from sinful reactions from chanting. If you have muddy feet, you wipe your muddy feet on a floor mat. You clean your muddy feet.
There's one more question.
That's okay. We're gonna close. Anybody in the room?
This story, Mrugahari the hunter and Narad Muni's story, this Ratnakar story, is this the same? Like, story is almost the same.
It's almost the same.
Yeah.
Almost the same.
Yeah. Okay. So is the same character Mrugahari the hunter, or it's a different?
It depends on the version of Ramayana that you read. If we just go one, all there is Valmiki Ramayana, everything is, we don't even talk about it, then we can go with that frame. But if we go with the frame, there's multiple authentic Ramayanas, then the answer depends on which Ramayana you read, or which Ramayana you're referring to, because there are different versions that are authentic. Sorry to give, cloudy answer, but that's... Yeah.
How to stay calm and composed in all the situations?
Be Krishna conscious. Because otherwise you're not.
Any practical from my situation?
You practice, you cultivate Krishna consciousness. Okay. And so that's just like, when an urge comes to be whatever it is, not calm and complacent, you pause. You go to a reflective space. Here it comes. This tendency that I have to get to go over there and get whatever it is, angry or hurt or some other kind of negative emotion, here it comes. Now I'm going to go to this Mudra Buddha's place and distance myself from the emotion. I'm the observer of it. It's not me. Now, so there's knowledge and detachment in the mode of goodness. Now, I wish to not just be ruled by that emotion, please. I wish to be ruled by you, Krishna. So how can I be of service to you? Not just about, you know, the emotion, but the situation that triggered the emotion. So that's you know, service to Krishna mode. There's other things that one can do too. Like, what is it about this situation that triggered me? Like, what's inside me? Because supposing it was, you know, another person doesn't seem to get triggered the way that I get triggered, but I'm, so what's inside me? Not like, what's the thing out there and I'm triggered? You know, you look introspection. This is Bhakti Siddhanta. You look within. What's the contamination within me that's causing that emotion, a response to something that's outside? Because it's something that's outside. My getting triggered isn't going to change to something that's outside anyways. It is what it is. It's, you know, it's cold in Chicago in the winter. Or somebody's nature is they speak the way that they speak. It's just the way they are. So, I accept that's the way they are. Why am I so triggered? What's in here that's causing that emotion? I don't have to like the behavior of the speech, but why am I so triggered by it? So let me make this clean. Instead of like, you know, rah-rah-rah about what's outside. Yeah.
So whenever situation comes, I know I react when there is a mode of ignorance time, that's where the influence comes.
Uh-huh.
So when I come out of it, I really pray, I regret, and then I'll ask forgiveness to Krishna, and then my real goal is to get rid of all my anarthas.
Good.
But will that prayer will help me, protect
yes.
me from all the ignorance situations?
Well, it's gradual. Because we're attached to the temporary. So we have to leverage becoming attached to a sat instead of the temporary, and then gradually the attachment to the temporary subsides and we have more strength to deal with that tendency to be attached to the temporary. It's gradual. It's a gradual cleansing process. But doing what you did, yes, keep doing it.
I was curious.
You have a powerful voice. Hold the microphone a little further away.
So I was curious to know that the poetry that came out of mouth of Valmiki Rishi was actually put it in his mouth by Lord Brahma.
He didn't say he put it in his mouth. He said it. I can't remember exactly, but it's not like it's my arrangement. So he, you know, he's a devotee, and a devotee can't do anything without the sanction of Krishna, so it's Krishna sanctioned it. But he wanted Valmiki to be the instrument for writing Ramayana.
Yeah.
He knew the whole 1 billion verses, but, you know, he's a qualified person to write the 24,000. So he gave him the hint and the clue. It was like, and then Super Soul facilitated.
So my question was around that particular content of that what came out of his mouth.
Yeah.
That he cursed the hunter to
yeah.
remain, his mind will not be peaceful ever.
Yeah.
So is there any significance?
Oh yes. Read Govindaraja's commentary. It's abundant commentary. And do you know what I'm speaking about, Govindaraja's commentary? I'll help you. Rather than the details are not fresh in my mind, but there's pages And those, some of those pages are found in Vidvan Gauranga's three volumes of Balakanda with Govindaraja's and others' commentaries. And that verse is really important. It's the mode of the entire Ramayana. It's not only the meter, but it's the mood of the entire Ramayana. But you want to know the significance, get Vidvan Gauranga's book and read it in detail, several pages of commentary on that question you just asked.
And any mention was made about that hunter later, like how he lived his life without any mental peace, any mention?
Unknown to me. Maybe somewhere it's spoken, but I don't know.
Thank you, Maharaj. I will try to get the book and read. Thank you.
It's available through Amazon.com. Vidvan Gauranga. And I told him I'm promoting his book. He was very happy. I was in Vrindavan when I told him that. He said, well, here's something. The bookstore in Vrindavan hasn't ordered any. So I said, I see what I can do. So I didn't directly communicate, but the person that orders books for the bookstore said, because Rompa Swami is asking, I'll order 5 sets. So he was like really happy, because that means it's that the whole khandas, all of them are going to come out and they're going to have some, and they'll sell because it's really nice. Really, really well done. I mean, it's a little bit on the scholarly side. You know, some people that aren't up in the scholarly side are not going to be attracted because they just like the stories. But it's, you know, it has answers to questions like this. Very carefully translated and very faithful to Prabhupada too. Okay, we're done. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Prabhupada Swami Maharaj ki jai.
Turn this up.